Hey there, this is Brian Zond, and welcome to my sermon podcast. I'm glad that you're interested in the sermons that I preach here at Word of Life Church in St. Joseph, Missouri. And if you ever feel inclined to help us by supporting us financially, you can do that at our website, WOLC.com. Thank you. My sermon this Sunday morning is entitled, Feel the Falseness. In John chapter 18, we find Jesus on trial before the Roman governor Pontius Pilate. I picked the story up at verse 37. Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born. And for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" In 1881... the great Russian novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky died. His eulogy was given by the philosopher and poet Vladimir Solovyov. Solovyov recognized that Dostoevsky was more than a novelist, that he was a spiritual leader, even a kind of prophet for the Russian people. As Solovyov eulogized Dostoevsky, he said this: "The first precondition of being called a spiritual leader is to perceive and feel the falsehood that is prevailing in society, and then to dedicate one's life to struggle against that falsehood. If one tolerates the falsehood and resigns oneself to it, one can never become a prophet. If one cannot rise above material life, one cannot even become a citizen of the kingdom of the Spirit, far less a leader of others." Well, can you feel it? It's all around you, but can you feel it? The falseness. The falseness that prevails within our society. The falseness is very strong right now. It's a dangerous time. But most are so sedated by the opiates of consumer culture that they never even suspect a thing. Some feel it but can't name it. It takes a prophet to name it. And of all the prophets who have ever felt the falseness and dared to resist it and dared to speak out against it, the greatest by far is Jesus of Nazareth. The witness of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. And perhaps Jesus' greatest prophetic moment was when he was on trial before Pontius Pilate. Let's go there. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus has been betrayed and arrested. He is then, in the dead of night, taken to a hastily convened gathering of the religious council, the Sanhedrin. And there in the middle of the night, he is put on trial, a religious trial, and he is condemned for blasphemy in that he claimed to be the Messiah, God's anointed king. The Sanhedrin is determined to execute Jesus, but they don't want to do it themselves. In fact, They're not allowed to. They are occupied by the Romans. Only the Romans could execute people. And so at dawn in the morning, Jesus is taken from the palace of Caiaphas to the praetorium of Pilate. The praetorium is lined in marble. It's stately, it's regal. Pilate, the Roman governor, is attired in the apparel appropriate for a man of his station. He's a Roman governor. There's the presence of the imperial seal. Everything conveys a sense of official grandeur. Jesus has not spent much, if any, time in places like this. Not this one, who when he was born, there was no room in the inn, so he's born among the cattle. This one who said, foxes have holes and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Here he is in the governor's palace with the marble and the stately attire and the impressive imperial seal. Pilate, as a man of action, moves immediately to the heart of the matter. And he simply asks Jesus, well, are you a king? Are you the king of the Jews? We say that Herod is the king of the Jews because Caesar says so. Caesar made Herod king of the Jews. Are you claiming to be king? Jesus affirms it with an enigmatic, you say I am, it's as you say. Jesus is on trial before the Roman governor Pontius Pilate. Jesus is on trial before the Roman Empire. Jesus is on trial before the world. Jesus is on trial before the world in all of its glory. Jesus is being tried by what we would call, accurately, Western civilization. At its pinnacle, at its peak, at its flowering, at its most noble and regal, the Roman Empire. Jesus is being tried by the world in all of its glory, and this is the world that Jesus had refused. 3 years earlier in his wilderness temptation, when the offer was that for just a token of compromise, it could all be yours. You could be the next Caesar. But Jesus had refused it, saying, you shall worship the Lord your God only, and him only shall you serve. And now the spurned world was striking back. Are you a king? You say that I'm a king. But then Jesus adds this. For this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. You see, Jesus feels the falseness. Jesus knows that despite the marble and the stately attire and the imperial seal and everything feels so official, he knows it's all built upon a giant falsehood. He knows this. And he'll dare to speak it. Jesus knows that the world that Cain built, you know, Cain kills his brother, moves east of Eden, builds the first city. Jesus knows that the world that Cain built, now inherited by the Pharaohs and the Caesars, is all built on a falsehood. Jesus feels the falseness and he says, this is the purpose I've come, that I might bear witness This is his prophetic witness. The witness of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. I've come to bear witness to the truth. And if anybody has just the slightest heart for truth, they'll listen to my voice. They'll at least know, he's saying something that's true there. Jesus knows that people who have not been completely overwhelmed by the spirit of falsehood will hear what he says and at least cock their head and take a moment and say, well, maybe he has something to say. Jesus stands before the Roman governor and says, look, this is the purpose for which I was born, that I might bear witness to the truth. And everyone who's of the truth listens to my voice. And we all know Pilate's legendary and infamous reply. What is truth? The cynical reply of a politician, what is truth? Or are we to believe that Pontius Pilate is a philosopher all of a sudden? What is truth? Pilate then sends Jesus over to the barracks, for this is part of the Antonia fortress, where the Roman soldiers are housed there in Jerusalem. Pilate sends Jesus to the barracks to be scourged. And while they're scourging Jesus, these soldiers, they know what's going on here. This pauper, this peasant from Galilee, apparently has a following that say he's the king, king of the Jews. And so they decide to have some fun with it. They're bored after all. And somebody says, well, he's a king. He needs a robe. Those aren't kingly clothes that he has on. Somebody get her. And somebody finds the cape of the imperial purple belonging to a Roman military officer. And they put it on him. They call him Your Majesty. Somebody says, well, you know, if he's going to be a king, he needs a scepter, and somebody hands him a reed. And then one of the more clever ones says, oh, he can't be a king without a crown. And he weaves together a crown of thorns and jams it on Jesus' head. And then they begin to say, hail, King of the Jews, or we would say it today, they began to play hail to the chief. What is this? Yes, it's cruel mockery, but what is this? It's the coronation of the world's true king. They may have meant it as mockery, but we who confess Jesus is Lord understand that this is the king coming into his glory. This is how Christ becomes king. This is the coronation of the world's true king. With a scepter that is a reed and a crown that is made of thorns, and soon the throne will be a cross. He then is brought from the barracks back to the praetorium, back to Pilate's headquarters. Still wearing the crown of thorns, still with the robe, still with the reed. And Pilate says to the people, behold your king. Behold your king. There he is. Your king. Pilate then begins to renew his interrogation, and he says to Jesus, where are you from? But now Jesus remains silent. He has nothing more to say. So he refuses to even answer. And this infuriates Pilate, who then explodes and shouts at Jesus, don't you know I have power to release you and power to crucify you? Don't you know I have power to to release you. I have power to crucify you. And you won't talk to me? Don't you know I have power? Power to release you and power to crucify you. And there it is. There it is. Pilate answering his own question. What is truth? I'll tell you the truth. Truth is power. The truth is I have power over you. I can let you go. I can crucify you. That's the truth. What is truth? Pilate says, it's power to kill. According to Pilate, the truth is that the world is run by men of power, military power, economic power, religious power, armies, economies, and temples. It's what runs the world. Generals, billionaires, and high priests, like Pontius Pilate, like King Herod, the richest man in the world, like Joseph Caiaphas, the high priest. In the world of Pontius Pilate, power trumps everything. But Jesus has already faced down all of that falsehood in the wilderness. One way of thinking about the three temptations is that they are economic temptations, religious temptations, political temptations. What if you started turning stones into bread? Or what if you destroy yourself off the temple? Economic, religious. What if you just compromise a little bit so that you could become the next great general? Conquer the world like every other conqueror. And Jesus says it is written, not by bread alone. It is written, don't put God to the test. It is written, you worship God alone. You only serve Him. Be gone from me. Pilate doesn't know that Jesus has already faced down all of these temptations. For Pilate, the truth is that power trumps everything. Even Caiaphas is caught up in that. So that when, put the picture back up. So that when Pilate says, behold your king. You know what Caiaphas said? Well, yes, Pontius Pilate was doing it in a way to mock Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin because there was no love lost between them. But do you know what Caiaphas said? He said, we have no king but Caesar. That's what he said. The Jewish high priest says, we have no king but Caesar. What a stunning betrayal of everything the law and the prophets ever stood for. It's a moment of stunning honesty. Here's what happens. For the moment, Caiaphas takes off his mask and he says, look, Governor, we all play our games. My game is religion. But I know the truth. I know the truth is that the world is run by men of power. Like you, like me, like King Herod, and most of all, like Caesar. I get it. I get it. The world is run by those that have the power. I get it. I know that. That's why I admit it. Okay, does it make you happy? I admit it. We have no king but Caesar. Now, I'm going to put my religious mask back on. And I'm going to go back to being high priest and playing the religion game. But at least now we know where we both stand. I know the truth. The truth that power trumps everything. Well, that, my friends, is the lie. That's the falseness that prevails in society. Can you feel it? The great lie is that life is about the acquisition of money and other forms of power. The lie is that to live the good life, to have an abundant life, you have to have proximity to power, political power and economic power. That's the lie, but can't you feel the falseness of it all? Resist it. Don't tolerate it. Rise above it. Cain was wrong. The meaning of life is not about winning and conquering your brother to do it. Life is about caring for your brothers and sisters. Am I my brother's keeper? Cain asks. The answer is yes. That's it, Cain. Yes, you are. The only thing we have to do in life. You think you have all this stuff to do. This is what you have to do. You are to love God and care for your sisters and brothers. That's it. That's what you have to do in life. Love God, because you'll never care for anything beyond yourself if you don't love God. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. The only thing you have to do in life is love God and care for sisters and brothers. Cain was wrong. Pharaoh was wrong. Caesar was wrong. Pilate was wrong. Herod was wrong. Nietzsche was wrong. God is not totalized will to power. God is love. God is not totalized will to power. God is love. And if it's true what we confess, that in the beginning God created, then it means this. The purpose of life is to love. The meaning of life is not power. The meaning of life is love. Life is not a competitive game. It's a gift. The goal of life is not to win. The goal of life is to learn to love well. Unless you love, your life will flash by in meaninglessness. So many, most of us, are formed, raised, schooled, taught that life is about winning and losing. That people are divided into winners and losers. And that you got to get ahead. It's a dog-eat-dog, man. Bloody in tooth and claw. Get your way to the top. Look out for number one. You got to take care of yourself, man. They hit you, you hit them right back. That's all a lie. It's not true. That's the highway to hell. That's the broad way that most people travel down. Jesus says, enter by the narrow gate. What is the narrow gate? He just told you. As you would have others do to you, do to them. It's not easy, but it leads to life. Sometimes I wonder about the judgment seat of Christ. Sometimes I wonder what they're going to ask me. And then sometimes I think I know. I think Jesus only has one question. He says, Brian, did you learn to love? And if I dare to say yes, he'll say, tell me how you loved. I think Jesus more or less is not interested in anything else. Tell me how you loved. Tell me. Life is not a competitive game. It's a gift. It's a gift given to you by God. Your being, your existence, your presence here in this moment is a gift from God. And it's not about a game where you try to get ahead and outdo Abel and be a winner and not a loser. What do you think Jesus meant when he says, I'm bringing the government of God, and I'm telling you, many are first are going to be last, and many are last are going to be first. We're going to flip some things around here. And some of these people that you're calling losers are going to come out way ahead of you. And we kind of like, la, 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 I didn't hear that. Life is not a competitive game, it's a gift. The goal of life is not to win. The goal of life is to learn to love well. Unless you love, your life will flash by. Cain was wrong. Pharaoh was wrong. Caesar was wrong. Pilate was wrong. Herod was wrong. Nietzsche was wrong. Oh, but Caiaphas. Caiaphas was especially wrong. I think Caiaphas was the wrongest of all on Good Friday. You know, kings and generals, presidents and politicians are more or less upfront about what they're up to. They don't hide the fact that they're in the game for power. Kings and generals, presidents and politicians. But with priests and pastors and spiritual leaders and faith leaders, it should be different. Caiaphas belongs to a faith that confesses that God is king. Think about all of those psalms that I promise you Caiaphas knows and leads and chants day after day. Yahweh is king. The Lord is king. But here he is confessing, we have no king but power. That's what he means, by the way. That's what he means. We have no king but power. Caiaphas doesn't believe in Caesar. Caiaphas believes in Caesar's power. You understand? When Caiaphas says we have no king but Caesar, he's really saying we have no king but power. He doesn't believe in Caesar. He believes in Caesar's power. What Caiaphas wants most is proximity to the most powerful man in the world. He wants a White House invitation. Did I say White House? I meant Imperial Palace invitation. Caiaphas wants to be close to power. He lusts for it. And when faith leaders prostitute themselves for political power, it is a complete betrayal of their high calling. The meaning of life is not power, but love. Because God is not power, God is love. Well, you don't, and some of you might want to argue, put the picture back up again. This is the world's true king. He comes among us as powerlessness, and then he'll go to his throne called the cross, and that's his glory. Being disguised under the disfigurement of an ugly crucifixion and death, Christ upon the cross is paradoxically the clearest revelation of who God is. God is love. Now, the generals don't believe this. I know that. The billionaires don't believe this. I know that. But the high priests are supposed to. I mean, Pilate doesn't believe this. Herod doesn't believe this, but the high priest is supposed to. I mean, he's supposed to believe that there are two great commandments. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. But there he is saying, we have no king but Caesar. Caiaphas has sold his soul for proximity to power. I wonder if Caiaphas ever heard Jesus say, what is the gain, man? What do you profit? If you get the whole world, but you lose yourself. You disintegrate your own self into falseness. Caiaphas can't feel the falseness. Caiaphas has become the falseness. Woe unto faith leaders who become the falseness. When we see faith leaders fawning over proximity to political power, don't we feel the falseness of their faith? Don't we know they too have confessed, "We have no king but Caesar"? Well, I feel the falseness. And I'm determined to resist it, to struggle against it, to not tolerate it. I want my praying, my preaching, and my writing to be a persistent resistance to the falseness prevailing in society. And so I ask you, can you feel the falseness? If you can, that's good. It means you have a heart for truth. Keep feeding that holy desire. How? Keep listening to the truth that Jesus speaks. Keep believing in the truth that Jesus is. Seek to live the truth that Jesus calls us to. And this is my prayer, that we here at Word of Life may be a prophetic people who, having felt the falseness in society, abide in the truth that is Jesus Christ. Amen. Stand with me if you would, please.